Good afternoon. I'd like to call the 1,370th meeting of the Board of Directors to order. First, we have the approval of the agenda as presented. Are there any objections to the agenda? It's on the blue sheet. Hearing none, the agenda is approved. May I have a motion for approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Downs and second by Mr. Downey. Is there any discussion of minutes? Hearing all those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? The minutes are approved. Next is public comment, and our first speaker is Pat Spray. Pat Spray. Welcome, Mrs. Spray. Mrs. Spray, you have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Board, for taking the time to listen to me. I'm here to ask the Board to consider looking into adding to the docket the changing the way that Metro Access fares are calculated. I'm sure that the Board did not intend for the chaos that has ensued from the way that the fares are being calculated from twice the fastest bus and rail. Just as an example, there's a 5-mile trip from my home. I just lost the can cost $3, $5.20, or $7 between 1 and 2 o'clock on a weekday. I know what time that I can arrange this ride so that it's 3 o'clock, but Metro Access can tell me what time they can provision that ride, which ends up that it will cost me $5.20 or $7. Now, the van doesn't follow where the trip guide says that that ride would occur if I was taking the bus and the rail. It takes the same 5-mile trip. And so this really needs to be looked at because it impacts not only those of us who work and have the means to pay the various fares, but the folks who are living on fixed incomes who are paying one fare one day and one fare the next day for the same trip. It's causing a lot of problems, and so I really urge the Board to listen to what the AAC and the Metro Access Subcommittee have put forth to put onto the docket for the public fare hearings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spray. And I'm going to ask Ms. Kissel and staff a question. At our meeting in which we revised the docket, one of our last items I recall asking in that meeting, actually it was someone else because I had to recall it, was the AAC recommendations. And I would like to know if there is something in the docket there.
Thank you. We have looked at this over the last couple of days. There's two components to it. One would be a technical capability to actually look at how we match the fares, which is a recommendation in the accessibility committee to go to a zone. And that would take some type of technical upgrade to the current system that we have. And the answer to that, very preliminary, is that we probably would not be able to get there by July 1. And the premise of putting things, or at least the premise, the assumption I'm making, putting things on the docket that we can actually implement by that time. The second point that the gentleman just made, which is a little bit of a different one, we have not looked at in depth. But it's actually, the point he's making is a good one. We do not currently match our scheduling to individual customers' rides. We actually look at it holistically. We try to accommodate as many customers as we can, and we try to implement a schedule that is cost-productive as well as efficient and provides that service. But the example that the gentleman gave is a true one. He if there was an issue where he wanted a ride, at one point during the time, it would be a lower fare than sometimes when he does get the ride. So that's an area that we can look at. I don't know, that would be probably putting something on the docket that would be above and beyond fares, because you'd have to look at the cost associated with matching schedule to fares. So I don't have a great answer for you, other than the commitment that I have, and Christian Kent and I have, at looking at this and trying to determine a more effective way to easily calculate fares for that community.
Okay, Mr. Downs.
If the board asks for an item to be entered into the docket, and it either proves to be technically not possible or that it is more complex than initially assumed, it would be good if the board knew that before the item came before the board. It's confusing, I think, to the board to ask for something to happen and then it not happen, and they not have a formal notice of it. I'm at a bit of a loss about how to protect on this docket a opportunity for the issue that was raised that you said needs more language, how to protect that for this docket.
I looked at Carol O'Keefe about the docket, but certainly we can, this came up last Thursday, so I agree with you that anything that should be recommended should come early enough so the board can consider it. This piece was not in the general manager's proposal. We did not afford the opportunity to analyze it in depth, so my apologies for that. But given that, we certainly could put it in a docket or in a public input so that we have an opportunity to analyze it during this period that the board and the public is assessing options. And so that would be my recommendation.
And Madam Chair, it seems to me that we don't set the fare for every Metro Access ride. We set in the docket the principle that it would be two times a comparable fare. How you arrive at that comparable fare is an algorithm that's undertaken. We don't set it. So I'm not sure you don't have the flexibility to make that change regardless of what's in the docket. But I think the point is the principle we want to establish is we are charging twice, two times the standard fare, but we should do it in a reasonable way.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, the only thing that has to go on the docket are proposals to raise the fare. So if the recommendations coming forth would not raise the fare, the board would still have the opportunity to do that.
I guess what you're discussing is the proposal that the Accessibility Committee provided us. And the question is, what within that proposal would have raised fares and would need to be on the docket if and should we want to act on it, even though you would come back maybe with the analysis to say this is what the impact would be. We then are informed that we can or cannot act on it, but I think what the question is in that recommendation, I was just wanting to make sure that we had responded to the board action.
Yes, and let me be succinct. In the proposal, as I have seen it, it is not recommending raising fares. It is recommending modifying, as Mr. Downey indicated, the twice a fixed route mm-hmm. guideline and how we calculate that. So that would be a lowering mm-hmm. of the fares, potentially. And then also we would have to look at some of the zone potentials that they also put in place. But a cursory review of that would be lowering the fares associated with that. I have not had a chance to go through all the technical analysis, the impact associated with that. But I'm looking to Carol Keith because I think we are coming to the conclusion that it doesn't necessarily have to be on the docket because we would have ability to lower. But certainly the concept might be something you want to discuss in public session.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Now, Ms. Hines and Ms. Porter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify, thinking in the past when I wasn't on this board, that there have been fair concepts that were not able to be implemented by July 1, but were implemented later in the year. And so the criteria that I heard Ms. Kissel articulate was the agency needs to feel comfortable it can be implemented July 1, that was not the thinking that I had. There are several ideas that I'm interested in that I'm fairly certain couldn't be implemented in July 1, and yet if they were able to be piloted or worked on and come in the later quarter of our fiscal year, I would be very interested in them. So I just want to get clear.
Sure. The difference, the distinction, because there's one that comes to mind immediately, which is the peak of the peak. That was not a technical upgrade to our current software system that we had to do to implement that. What it meant was it was actually a tariff change in the tables that we had. We needed assistance to do that, but it didn't modify it was actually within one modest control to do that. We took time to do that because we had a lot of things on our plate, which is why we made that statement that we would implement it in the first quarter. Some of the suggestions, and Ms. Hines, you had recommended on the customized, I call it the customized past option, but that's something that would be a very technical software programming change, which would not be able to be implemented, of course, by the time frame. But I don't even have a time frame for when that could be implemented, you know, if you will, in the first quarter of the year. And it would have actually a lot of impact on revenue that I don't currently have the information on. And that's why, again, we talked about having that discussion in the public session and having the opportunity and time frame to do more analysis on that. Because it does change the construct of typically how customers might want to buy fair media to write our system.
Okay, I'm gonna go ahead, Ms. Porter, and we'll go back to the public.
I appreciate the information that we could do something that was not on the docket if it did not involve raising fares. But I think the important piece of this particular proposal is that we get it out there in some fashion so that it can be commented on. So I don't want it to let it drop just because, okay, we could do it even without putting it on the docket, but I'd like to have a way for it to be out there either formally on the docket or in another fashion and explained in such a way that people could comment on it, we could get some feedback on it. Thank you.
I think probably the way to accommodate that is the public forum part rather than the formal public hearing, so that can be put out there as much as we know or don't know about it. People can at least comment and get reactions to it.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Kathy Spray.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, for giving me the opportunity to be here. If the things that are covered are what you all have just been discussing, my apologies. Unfortunately, my hearing aid hasn't been able to get set up for this room, so I missed a lot of the conversation. I stand here today to urge this board to add the AAC Fair Working Group proposal to the public comments pocket. Understand the major technical and asking them for their opinion first. Putting it off because there may be technical difficulties getting implemented by some obligatory deadline would just mean that this will get put off for another year. Also, you're already going to be holding public hearings on other things on the docket. This should be folded into that because otherwise you're looking at having to take the cost of setting up another set of public hearings just for this one topic. This is the time when you can get the public input into the work the AAC Fair Working Group has put together, along with Ms. Kissel and the other staff at WMATA, that has tried to address all the concerns, practical, revenue, and everything else, to come up with a fair and equitable system. Because the GM's proposed budget estimates that there will be a 28% increase in revenue from Metro Access in next year. 28%. Sounds really mild, just a little bit more than 25%, a little bit more than 33%, or a little bit less. In real terms, that's $2 million per year extra that's coming out of Metro Access when the ridership numbers and the amount of trips going out has been falling. You put 5 cents down on a normal fare, that's 10 cents to us. That's $2 million more from the disabled community coming into this. This system that is a civil rights legislation required system, $2 million more from people who may not be in the best position to handle it. Please, I urge you, add this to public pockets.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gray. Our next speaker is Michael Sendrin.
Sendrin. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Directors, all with a sign of my voice. Michael Sendrin, a disabled veteran who has served our country more than most. Metro's been in the press, and it hasn't been too favorable as of late. An article titled, Metro Heights Fees as Ridership Plummets. And we have a picture of the GM, where it says here, 1,000 more workers won't fix Metro. So it's incredible that General Manager Richard Sarles has included a 9% payroll increase, the largest employee expansion in Metro history, in his proposed budget for the next fiscal year. Sarles wants to add 1,013 positions at an average cost of $108,375 each. What can I sign up to, Sarles? I'll take a 15% cut, 20%, but you'll add 20 grand for that. Reading on further, it says here, eventually, Metro predicts ridership will decline by 3% next year. And then, moreover, it says here, a fourth fare increase since 2008. If it's a GM's intent to dismantle Metro, he's doing a good job of it. The Metro fare card, the Metro comment card, and I understand, Mr. Charles, you've been making the rounds and you've been seeing some things undercover. That's good. It's good for you to learn firsthand experience what we are experiencing. On your comment card, it says here, do you want to be contacted? And I filled out a number of them, delivered to your office, courtesy of Cassandra, who does a good job. And I put here, yes, I want to know the results of actions taken. I haven't heard a word. And I filled out more than one of these, so the waiting room, I'm sharing. We have also, in terms of law enforcement, DC man suing Metro police officer. You know, Chief, this is becoming the poster child. This is not good. Front news. All right. Who came for this? That's the Express. The Examiner. Lotto tickets bought with bags of coins lead to bust in massive Metro theft. This is on your watch, Chief. You're working hard. How do you work? Well, we're working. Work with me. Don't work with me. I've written to Treasury, Angel Cabrera, and Rod Chernoff, calling me garbage. That's just inappropriate, Madam Chair. I put in a comment card. I haven't had a response, Mr. Charles. Treat me the way you'd want to be treated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Sandra.
That is the last speaker for public comment. I have a motion that I move that the board certify to the best of its members' knowledge that at the just concluded executive session, only such matters as were authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? The next item on the agenda is a report by the Accessibility Advisory Committee. Mr. Sheehan.
Good. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate being here. I have our report today to you. You've heard quite a bit already on Metro Access. I'd like to say a few more things, and then I'd like Phil Posner, who's worked with our Fair Policy Working Group, to discuss specifics on the proposal that you have for you. First thing that I'd like to say is, as a little bit of history, we've been working with Carol Kissel, Christian Kent, Office of 88 Programs, for the last 6 months to develop certain proposals that are, have been based on the fair policies that that have come forward from study groups that WMATA has contracted with. We did come up with a proposal concerning the zones that we were ready to give this month, and which we will discuss. But what happened last Thursday really sort of put us into a little bit of a bind. The general manager came before you with a proposal that with proposals and with fare or revenue increase, as you've seen, 28% for Metro Access, 5% for bus, and I think it was minus 2% growth for rail. My feeling is that if Phil Posner hadn't been here to see that there was a 28% fare increase or 28% revenue increase, the disability community probably would have not been able to comment on that and come up with proposals that would affect and help make Metro Access a viable system in the upcoming budget proposal. I guess the question that I have is, how can you have an increase of 28% on Metro Access? From the discussions that I've heard, Metro Access wasn't even discussed very much, or at least put forward by the GM in his proposal, that it was going to be calculated and there would be basically no change in the calculations. There's so much that's wrong with that. Phil's going to go into some of the specifics on our proposals. But one of the questions that I would ask the board is, did you ask the general manager whether he had put these ideas before the AAC? Because if he had, we would have been able to work with him and come back and come up with proposals that wouldn't have been so last minute. I hear the discussions amongst the board members. Why haven't these been vetted? Why were these proposals sort of last minute? We haven't really looked at the numbers. Well, the AAC had to react to proposals that the GM came up with at the very last minute, that we had no notion of a 28% fare increase or revenue increase. So I think that a question going forward is, if when you get proposals before you that deal with the disability community, first question from the board should be, have you checked with the AAC? We're willing to work with disability groups. We certainly have good relationships with WMATA staff, Christian Kent and Carol Kissel. I think we have a way forward. We certainly need to have answers as to what the 28% revenue increase means. 28,000 disabled people had signed up for Metro Access. Up to a few years ago, you had 9,000 to 10,000 trips per month. When the disability community comes before the AAC and sees numbers like 28%, they're going to ask my committee what's going on here. We don't have any answers. We want to be able to provide them. So I think then from my part, what we need is better communication. I'm going to get off my little soapbox now. I'm going to let Phil talk for a second, but I do have a suggestion for the upcoming hearings. Something we tried a few months ago is to have telephone access for disabled people so that they can call in and record their comments, particularly with the way Metro Access costs now. If you have a $7 trip to a place and a $7 trip back, $14 is a lot of money for a disabled community. This helps open up the public comment period during the hearings, something I would encourage so that you get more people with disabilities to give their input. Now I want to let Phil talk to you specifically about the proposals and how they relate back to some of the principles that the board says that they want to live by. And what we are looking to create is a win-win situation so that Metro Access can be simplified and be fair as far as the cost is concerned, but also that we create a win situation for WMATA so that Metro Access is paying their fair share. Bill?
I want to thank everybody. I attended the Thursday session, and I thought the board did a brilliant job. The discussion on equity was wonderful. The in-depth questioning and discussion of the items to go on the docket was wonderful. I want to thank you all for that. I just want to reinforce the fact we sent you some recommendations initially about what principles should be applied to the fares. And they're based on principles that the board had already established. They were ensure and enhance customer satisfaction. Well, clearly, the GM's budget doesn't do that for Metro Access. Removing the peak of the peak may do that for rail riders, but it certainly doesn't help Metro Access riders by having a 28% increase in revenues. Establish a mechanism to allow customers to determine fares easily. Well, right now there are 320,000 iterations of fares for a ride during a 30-minute period from one point to another. Based on a complex system that took a year for WMATA staff to set up, so that someone can go from one place to another for $3 and 2 hours later come back from that place to the place they left for $7, depending upon where a bus route happens to be during this long route. And the new budget does not address that. And that's one of the major issues that we try to address, the simplification and the understanding. 320,000 for a disability community, an aging community, a cognitively challenged community just does not work. Third, establish equitable fares and ensure compliance with federal regulations. And that's where one of the catches are, because the ADA, the letter of the law, does not always follow the intent of the law. And because the paratransit fares have to be tied to fares in the system, we run into a problem because of the PG bus, the bus, which charges a $1 fare. And so the maximum ADA permits is twice that fare, which would be $2. And the fourth is generate adequate revenue and maintain ridership. Well, in the original calculations, that really didn't generate adequate revenue, which is why the new system of complex fares came into account to generate adequate revenue. So what we tried to do in working with Ms. Kiss and other staff was to come up with a simpler system that would meet the ADA requirements. And initially, when the zone proposal was presented, as one of the initial sources said, fantastic. I live in Arlington. Star used the zone system. I understand the zone system. Ms. Hines is shaking her head. Yes. And we said, wouldn't that be great? We weren't asking to reduce fares. We were actually asking for simplification. Actually, when the zone system, and that's why that should be on the docket, it will actually increase fares for some people. So a zone system does not universally reduce fares. It will come up with an understandable fare that in some instances will be an increase, in some instances will be a reduction. Two Thursdays ago, when the GM presented his budget, the second option came about, which was the two-tiered fare cards. And so basically, with an alternative proposal, because now the zones might not have been considered on the docket. We had a very rapid meeting, and we came up with our proposal based on a base boarding fare and two zones that would come in. And that, again, in some instances, that might raise fares for some people, lower fares for other people, but above all, it's going to simplify things. So we are requesting that ours be considered on the docket for public input. Ms. Kissel spoke to me today, and we had an indirect conversation yesterday, and she has been very helpful in trying to help us organize things and meet our goals. But the bottom line is, We are requesting that the fares be simplified and that equity be taken into account. At last Thursday's hearing, you heard that eliminating the peak of the peak is going to cause a shortfall of $10 to $12 million. Well, how is that going to be made up? You're going to be simplifying understanding the fares for the riders on rail, but are you going to get that $10 million from Metro Access? Where's it going to come from? If you look at the chart that's on page 6 in the manager's budget and you look at the numbers, they go from $6 million to $8 million in revenues for Metro Access projected for the coming year. That's a $2 million increase, and you're giving away $10 to $12 million by removing the PPP. I think there are other ways to handle that, and that's for the fiscal people to figure out. But the simple-minded way I think of it is remove the scheduling problem with the Peak of the Peak and find a workable fare increase on bus, rail, and Metro Access that will cover no shortfall. That makes things simple for rail, makes simple for Metro Access, and still keeps the money coming in to keep the system working. And above all, understand the Accessibility Advisory Committee wants sufficient funds to come in. We do not want a free ride. We want a fair ride. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Posner and Mr. Sheehan. And let me say, I think you've heard part of the discussion. You talked, referenced the discussion at the prior committee meeting and the conversations here today. I think there is an interest of trying to address that, and I hope that we can move forward in this meeting to come to a conclusion of how best to address it. But it is equity, and we recognize the complexity of the paratransit system, and so I'm certain the board is not interested in making it more complex or make it inequitable, but thank you for your comment.
Thank
and
you.
We will
confidence in the board, Ms. Kissel and Mr. Kent. I'm sure you're going to do the right thing.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Notes to the board that the Riders Advisory Report is not today, but there is a written report in our package here today, and I would just like to indicate that it is here for the record. As part of my comments right now, I would like to call former member Mr. McKay up front. As the year changed this year, there was a shift in the Northern Virginia representation to the WMATA board. Mr. McKay has the good fortune or not good fortune of serving with me in Fairfax County. He serves as Transportation Committee, and he is in his second term in representing the citizens of the South County and Lee District. And we have enjoyed his service here on Metro. He has served in subcommittees. He has chaired and been actively involved with committees here. And he provides a wealth of talent and information on the subject matter of transportation as well as other things. Regrettably, he is not continuing in this voice on this board, but he is not going away from the issue. So we invite you here, and we'd like to present to you, coming forward, a thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. I'll be brief because I know how long these days can be. It wasn't that long ago that I was experiencing them. First, I will tell you, since I left, I've had a very hard time convincing people that I talked to of my next statement, which is I really enjoyed serving on the WMATA Board of Directors. And I have to say, the last 4 years that I've been on this board have arguably been the most difficult years in this transit agency's history. ever since the accident occurred, the difficult budget sessions that we've been through, and it has not been an easy task, and my hats are off to all the folks who have been involved in it. I obviously have great respect for this organization and the work that they do. I think one of the proudest moments of my 4 years was representing Virginia on the search committee for general manager. And I think Rich is doing a heck of a job rebuilding, literally rebuilding this organization from the ground up. It's not easy work. It's not convenient. It's not always great newsworthy, but it's important to the long-term sustainability of this organization to rebuild that foundation. One thing that we learned on the day of the accident, which I, for the life of me, will never forget, and I remember watching the news accounts of it right after the incident. Supervisor Hudgens and I were, our board was in session, and we were seeing what was going on. And I couldn't help to obviously be very saddened for this organization and the difficult times that lied ahead. But we had to move forward and understand two really important things. One is that a strong safety culture matters. And I think the work that's been done since that accident is remarkable in improving the safety culture of this organization. And the other thing that's important is funding. And how we fund this organization has a direct correlation to our ability to provide services. And so the only trepidation I have in leaving here today is that we're embracing a new concept in the Commonwealth of Virginia. By having a Virginia representative on this board. And with that responsibility, I hope comes the reliance that Virginia will be a new funding partner with WMATA. And I think history has shown that the reputation of the Commonwealth in providing transit services, and in particular to WMATA, has not been as strong as we'd like to see it be. And I hope that by having a seat for the Commonwealth at this dais, that that reputation will improve. They are represented by a very talented and respected individual, and I hope that the administration, the members of the Virginia General Assembly, will listen to this board and its representative about the financial needs of this organization as we rebuild it, and most importantly, we rebuild the confidence that our customers have. The last thing I'll mention is that my 4 years here have been really focused on trying to promote the needs of our customers. I mean, that's why we're all here. The work that you do allows a whole lot of other people, hundreds of thousands every day, to do the work that they do. And there are a lot of folks that take Metro for convenience. There are a lot of folks that take it because it's a better ride. But there's also a lot of folks out there who rely on it as their only ride, their way of connecting them to jobs, their way of connecting them to society. And we have a moral responsibility to make sure that we continue to do that for the strength of our economic development, but also for the strength of our region. And so do not forget the customers. I know you won't. And I wish this very talented board, many of which are new members that I didn't have a lot of time to serve with, Godspeed in your efforts to help rebuild this organization and its credibility with its customers. So I was glad to play a small part of that, and I thank you for this recognition.
Thank you. The next item is the swearing in of an incoming new member. And as Jeff has indicated, the, Virginia's representation has expanded to the point to include a Commonwealth representative. And many of us in the Northern Virginia area and probably around the Commonwealth know Jim Dyke quite well. And so we welcome you to the board. Look forward to working closely with you. We have begun already in the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, and we look forward to you representing the Commonwealth as we know you in Northern Virginia. And so with that, I ask you to come forward and
let's do it here, and let's do it out here. Sure. And I'll ask you to repeat after me. I, James Dyke, do hereby solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution and laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia, from which I was appointed as the Principal Director of the Board of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, and will faithfully discharge the duties of office upon which I am about to enter. Congratulations.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to say thank you for the swearing in. I really look forward to working with each and every one of you, and I want to say how much I really appreciate the fact that you've created a circumstance where as soon as I walk in the door, I need to deal with fare increases and possible withdrawing of a jurisdiction from the Dulles line. But I sort of hit the ground running, so I'm looking forward to it and making sure that the Commonwealth is, in fact, very much a part of this, and we will do all that we can to be an advocate for Northern Virginia and the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is the report of the General Manager and CEO. Mr. Salas.
Thank you. I thought it was appropriate to start this first full board meeting of the new year with a look back at what we accomplished in 2011, as well as a look ahead at our priorities in 2012. When I signed on as GM CEO last January, I told the board we would focus on safety, state of good repair, financial stability, and improving customer service. Thanks to the hard work of our employees at all levels, we are delivering results. We have submitted 16 of 27 NTSB recommendations for closure. We've completed all 10 FTA safety recommendations. We've advanced the new 7,000 series rail cars through preliminary design review meetings. Through collaboration and transparency, WMATA's relationship with safety oversight organizations transitioned from adversarial to collegial. We've rebuilt our safety program, which meant strengthening leadership. In fact, we've increased safety staff by 60%. And putting people in the field, integrating them with the line operations, and conducting extensive training. From the top down and bottom up, we are changing safety culture. Thanks to the commitment and focus of our workforce, employee and passenger injury rates declined last year 9% and 16% respectively as of November. We also benefited from proactive and prevention-focused policing, as well as strong partnerships with local law enforcement agencies working to make the system more secure for our passengers. Through those efforts, we saw a drop in crime of 17% year over year as of November. Last year, we accomplished more capital rebuilding work than in any year since Metro opened. Progress is visible throughout the system. We installed 15 miles of new running rail, rehabilitated, replaced 37 escalators and 3 elevators, completed structural rehabilitation for 4 station platforms, and paver tile rehabilitation at 2 stations, and increased equipment maintenance. To keep the average bus fleet at or below 7.5 years, Metro purchased 152 new hybrid electric buses last year. 114 of those buses are now in revenue service, while 38 are being inspected and commissioned. Metro also performed midlife rebuilds on 112 buses to support fleet reliability. We acquired 241 new Metro Access vehicles to better serve people with disabilities. I want our customers to know that we are acutely aware of the inconvenience sometimes caused by our work to rebuild the system. Improving the safety and reliability of this system after years of underinvestment is a marathon, not a sprint. We remain committed to our course of reaching a state of good repair, and we deeply appreciate the forbearance of the riding public. We'll ultimately be the beneficiaries of a safe, on-time, and reliable system befitting the nation's capital. In the meantime, we are taking small but important steps forward to improve service. Our improved maintenance programs are paying off. In November, we reached a high of 90% escalator availability. Rail on-time performance improved, making or exceeding the target for most of 2011. Bus on-time performance also improved, despite worsening traffic congestion and 7 million more riders boarding and alighting last year. One important marker of customer service is communications, and we've made progress improving our communications with key stakeholders through a deliberate, continuous effort to reach out to elected officials, business and community leaders, and most importantly, to our riders. Accordingly, we have increased our customer research efforts, getting firsthand feedback on a range of topics from the next generation of the Metro Map to the extensive customer involvement in the design of our new rail cars. We launched Metro Forward to explain our rebuilding efforts and the long-term benefits that our customers can expect. As part of Metro Forward, we are also providing customers information they need about temporary service changes so they can make informed travel decisions while we restore the system. We refreshed our website and engaged the public with a new Facebook page, posted 30 videos on our YouTube channel, and we continue conversations with nearly 24,000 Twitter followers, the second highest of any transit agency in America. Last year, I said we would improve technology for the convenience of our customers, and we did just that with a partnership with Google Transit and implemented the long-awaited virtual tunnel at Farragut Crossing. We also introduced the Smart Trip Online Reload, which has been well received with 59,000 online reloads to date by our customers. The daily average has reached about 600 online transactions. And our quarterly reporting through Vital Signs and the WMATA.com scorecard continues to show the public how we measure ourselves and the progress we are making. None of this would have been possible without support from our stakeholders, which has been extraordinary and steadfast. Under intense budget pressures, we sustained federal financial support thanks to the leadership of our congressional delegation as well as increased support from the jurisdictions. As you know from my budget presentation to the Finance Committee, we intend to continue on this path of progress. On our top priority of safety, we will achieve some very specific objectives this year, starting with the completion of all NTSB recommended mainline guarded number 8s this summer. In addition, we will complete the Red Line Track Circuit Replacement Program this fall, which is necessary to support the return in the future to automatic train operations. And we will develop and begin to implement a fatigue management program to improve safety and reduce overtime. We are continuing with our system safety analysis of the train control system and undertaking efforts to secure event recorders in the rail car fleet. A new safety communications campaign is getting underway this spring for our employees. And in a second phase this year, we will educate customers about injury prevention. We have proposed to enhance the system safety by adding police that will enable us to expand the patrols, particularly on buses. To enhance parking security, Metro Police have purchased 2 more gators, to double the number, now 4, that will patrol our parking facilities. And we're installing a trailer-mounted camera system that can monitor parking lots and record suspicious or illegal activities, serving to further deter crime. With respect to the rebuilding program, in the coming year, we will rehabilitate another 40 escalators and, beginning next week, replace 3 at DuPont Circle. We will rehabilitate another 12 miles of running rail and rehabilitate a dozen more stations. We'll implement escalator remote monitoring, which will give us real-time information about escalator performance that will help reduce out-of-service time and speed our response to malfunctions. We expect this year to continue to improve cell phone service, working in conjunction with the carriers. And we'll open the new Shepherd Parkway bus facility this fall. Next month, we'll launch Metro Alerts, the first ever email alerts for our bus customers. The new program will be fully intermodal. When customers can go to WMATA.com to subscribe to email alerts, they will be able to choose bus, improved rail, or both to get up-to-the-minute information regarding service conditions, detours, and customer advisories. We encourage customers to sign up when it launches and give us feedback on how we can improve on this tool. Also, by the end of February, we'll have secret shoppers riding throughout the bus and rail system, giving us feedback on the customer's experience, from interaction with our employees to station cleanliness, to help us target improvements in customer service. In June, we'll implement Rush Plus, increased train service during peak travel times on the blue, yellow, orange, and green lines. We'll begin hiring and training personnel to operate the Silver Line extension to Dulles. And for our bus customers, we will make needed adjustments and additions to the Priority Carter network, which currently serves more than 50% of our customers. We will also make service adjustments throughout the system to provide improved on-time performance, reduce overcrowding, and increase customer satisfaction. This year, we will request proposals for a new Metro Access contract that will introduce greater operating efficiencies, innovation in service delivery, and leverage competition to produce the best value for Metro's customers with disabilities. And we will continue to advance the development of the new electronic fare payment system to provide improved features and flexibility for our riders. Also this year, we will introduce smart trip card machines in every station. We will continue to support the board's strategic planning efforts as you begin to meet with the region's stakeholders to better define Metro's role in the future. Finally, let me say that while I commend this team for its hard work and substantial progress, I am the first one to say there is an enormous amount of work ahead. This is a crucial year for Metro as we continue to press on with our safety, rebuilding, and improvement efforts. Continued funding from our federal and jurisdictional partners is critical to keep Metro moving forward. Last year's actions by Congress on the debt ceiling legislation include a provision requiring an across-the-board funding cut for all federal programs. This action, together with continued concern about the economy and the political environment, create a very challenging atmosphere in which we must make the case for continued federal, state, and local funding. The progress that we have made over the past year clearly demonstrates that federal, state, and local funding of Metro is both necessary and a good investment. And now I want to turn our attention to one of our co-workers, whose actions exemplify our focus on safety. Train operator Samuel Hartwell, Jr. was operating the Blue Line train to Largo Town Center Metro Rail Station during the evening rush hour on November 27th. At about 5:30, as he approached the L'Enfant Plaza platform, he saw a woman in a motorized chair tumble onto the track bed. Fortunately, Mr. Hartwell was able to stop his train enough time. Next, he saw five customers jump onto the tracks to help the woman who fell. Because of the danger of these customers being on the track with power not yet shut off, he immediately jumped onto the tracks to guide and direct these individuals away from the third rail and out of the track bed, while at the same time relaying information about the incident to Rail Operations Central Control. After seeing the customers all safely away from the track, Mr. Hartwell then climbed back onto his train to communicate the incident to his customers aboard the train. His quick thinking and fast action saved the life of the woman who fell, as well as the Good Samaritans who put themselves at risk to help a fellow rider. We deeply appreciate his service to Metro. Mr. Hartwell, will you join me in the front, please?
Thank you very much, Mr. Sauls and Mr. Hartwell. Our thanks to you. You are an example of the many employees that work at this agency. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is finance report. And at the January 26th meeting and at the January 12th meeting, a resolution authorizing a public hearing on the proposed 2013 fare adjustment was discussed at the meeting of Finance and Administration. At this meeting, it was referred to the board to include in the general manager's proposed docket for public hearing on the FY 2013 fare adjustments. There was a work session scheduled also on January 19th, at which the committee gave further guidance. Based on those guidelines, the resolution was amended to include the following items. The public hearings on the proposed FY30 FY2013 capital improvement program would be held in conjunction with the fare adjustment hearings, and that the 5-cent surcharge on the entry and exit for the station improvements at up to 2 stations in each of the compact jurisdictions, subject to the further board approval of the proposed improvements. The option of an increased non-smart trip fare surcharge, a 2-zone fare structure option for the paper fare cards, and a 1-day rail pass for the smart pass, paper pass, I'm sorry, for the or the smart trip pass. I move approval of the docket items in the resolution as amended. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a discussion? Okay. Yeah. Yes. Mr. Downey.
Yeah, from those sessions, we also did ask that a monthly pass be brought forth for consideration. I think we should discuss why it is not being brought forth, if it is not being brought forth.
It's a question that's posed to staff. The absence of the monthly pass on the docket.
It was my understanding at the work session we had last Thursday when we were discussing the monthly pass, and at that time it was something that we could do. My interpretation of the monthly pass being requested was just that a monthly, we have a weekly pass that's priced at a certain amount, so we would then just take that weekly pass and make it into a monthly pass that was priced sufficiently. Later on, it was my understanding that that was not what the request was. The request was to have a monthly pass that I want to call a customized monthly pass based on the rider's preference. So the example that I have was provided is a good one. If you want, if you ride 5 days a week from Clarendon to Courthouse, and you do that trip every day, every month to commute, we would actually customize a pass for you, and we price it for that route. And then it would do two things. It would be efficient, so you'd have ease of use. It would also incent you to ride in between that, take additional trips within that route that you would not necessarily, that would be priced within the pass, and you wouldn't be charged incrementally for that. That is something that was then came brought to my attention. On a technical basis, I am unable to affect that change in our system for two reasons. One, it would require a software change to the current NextFare system that we currently have in place, and we have to really think about the costs associated with that. We have to do a whole programming change and do an analysis, testing, reliability. That would take quite a bit of time. The second issue is we would actually need a lot of time to explore the implications of that. To some extent, you would be changing potentially customers' behavior from going to the current tariff system that we have now, where you actually pay as you go, if you think of it that way, for your trip, into really more of this monthly type of activity. And that could have a big impact to how customers purchase fare media and how they use it. And so I don't have the impact of the analysis on that, so that would be another reason why we'd have need some time to actually discuss it. The last thing I will say is it's a concept that we are committed to reviewing and embracing, but we would like to actually understand what that impact is. So we're committed to doing that.
Any other questions regarding that one? Ms. Hines.
Thank you, because this was an idea that I had promoted pretty heavily last week. And I am sympathetic to the technical issues. I'm also sympathetic to the fact that that we really don't know everything we might wish to know regarding what would be most convenient for customers. I would point out that this idea has been kicking around for a number of years and has been promoted by a number of people who follow us quite closely, particularly on Greater Washington, and there's been conversation. So we know there are pros and cons. If you go and look on the website today, there was an article last week, you can see some of the issues. What I am actually hoping happens, though, as part of our town hall meetings, is that this is a topic where we have thoughtfully put together some of the right questions to begin to tease out what customers would find of use. I would also put on the table that there are at least two other jurisdictions that I'm aware of that do something like this. Minneapolis, St. Paul just started, although they have a much smaller system. And I think it's Portland, someplace on the West Coast also.
Seattle
has something similar. So it's not undoable. We know it can be done. And what I'm looking for, and I think is important in our conversation today, is a sense of the board that this is something, this is a place we want to go, and that we want to understand it in its complexity, but that given our system, given, quite honestly, the move from the off-peak, from being a standard price, to it now being potentially a distance-based price, all of those reasons lead me to think that our regular customer, we can develop something that works for our regular customer in this manner. So I really want to know for sure it's in the town hall meeting and that we'll put some thought into the questions. And I really would like to hear from my colleagues that we would like to see this advanced as we move into the next fair payment system, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Porter and then Mr. Dyke. I would agree with Ms. Hines about the importance of looking at the past concept. I think she's made the point this time and before about some of the positive things that could come out of it. I would also like to request, I mean, this item before us is for the formal docket items. I would like to request that the staff also provide us, as soon as they can, a list of the town hall discussion items, which is a larger list of items than the ones that are simply on the docket. And I would also like for us to think between now and 2 years from now or whenever about sort of fair principles or fair constructs. We already know that one of the things that the fares do is they, or at least theoretically, move people from riding at one time to riding at another time. And as we deal in the future with congestion issues, which we will have to do more and more, I think we should be thinking of fares as one of the items in our toolbox for managing that. And so rather than waiting until a couple months before a budget comes up and saying we need to do fare increases, so let's do X, Y, and Z, I would encourage us to think in a longer term of fares as a broader issue. And starting with that, I would like to see some of these larger concepts included in the discussion at the town hall meetings. And I'd like to, if we could look at that list ahead of time, it would be helpful.
Let me go to Mr. Dykes.
Madam Chair, I'll just be very brief. My colleague from the Commonwealth wanted to know how Collins felt about this. I totally agree with Mary's position and would support us having a discussion of that at the town hall meetings.
Okay, thank you. And after we go off of this docket motion, then maybe we will just have a statement that we can make sure that it's addressed and regarding our town hall meeting. Mr. Acosta?
I'm very supportive of Ms. Hines' request. I had worked at a transit agency where monthly passes were very popular. I think the key issue here is how do you encourage more off-peak ridership on services that we currently exist? How do you reward our most frequent loyal customers, I think, is a key issue, especially when we're, I think most of our construction projects are occurring during the off-peak, and I think there is an issue in terms of making them feel better about riding the service during those periods. So I think there are a number of issues that I think we could explore. Perhaps the monthly pass is one option. There might be others that options that the public can bring to us at those meetings that we may consider in the future. But I think it would be a very interesting discussion. I also think the point about we had come up with fair principles earlier this year, but I also think it's always good to come back to them and talk to the public about them, which I would hope would happen during the public forum. So I'm very supportive of both the discussion points that were raised earlier.
Ms. Bowser?
I guess my question is, so the seven-day fast pass remains. You're not recommending eliminating that. You're just changing the price. So mechanically, would be the difference with the seven-day fast pass, so say a 28-day fast pass, a monthly fast pass?
Well, that's a good question. The concept for a 28-day pass would be that you would just buy a pass based upon the route that you travel most frequently. And right now, the 7-day pass is throughout the system.
But why can't, why doesn't, I don't know if that addresses the desire to have a monthly pass.
Well, we can have a monthly pass the way, but I don't think that was the intent, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we can introduce a monthly pass onto the docket. It would just be similar to the 7-day pass functionality. So we can do that.
So the 7-day pass, what's the benefit to the rider of the 7-day pass? They pay, how does the 7-day pass work?
The benefit to the rider is they buy that one pass and they ride, they could take additional trips is the biggest benefit.
But the rush hour trip is capped, the amount. They can take unlimited trips of any amount for 7 days.
Yes, yes. That's the 7-day pass. Yeah. So it's the biggest the biggest benefit to the customer is that they can take additional trips in addition to their regular commuting trip. They can for the price of the 7-day pass.
So how is that different from what you were seeking to?
Well, there's two issues. If you think of this as something that is useful to the person who's coming in and out every single day. So their base of rides is 10 rides of a certain length, right? So at $47, their average ride is $4.70, you know? And I do have a question about why we've taken this from a somewhat discounted from the right now the max fare is $5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the person with the 7-day pass was getting a little bit of a break.
Generally, it was raised because of the max fare price.
Right, but it went to the top of the max. There's no discount in the new proposal.
No, but we went to the higher price for the docket. We can always come down.
Right. So that's that's good to know. But anyway, so for instance, Ms. Bowser, for somebody from the inner jurisdiction, the 7-day pass, unless you're running multiple errands, is priced quite a bit above what your regular commuting ride is. So I suspect that the 7-day pass is more popular in Fairfax and Far Montgomery than it is in either of our jurisdictions. And that's really what the variable rate is trying to get at.
But that's what the short pass did, right? That you proposed to eliminate the 7-day short trip pass.
That
gets closer to more price to short trips.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it sounds to me like what you're trying to get at may be achieved with making a 28-day short trip pass and a 28-day other pass.
We can put that on the docket now.
Great. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And we'd have to figure out a price for that. I can't come up with a price today for that, but we could certainly put it on the docket. Can I put it on the docket without a price, Carol?
Why don't you raise it the 5 or 6% that you are planning to raise everything else?
I'd have to figure out the current monthly price. We can make it the, I'd have to figure that out. We could just pick, right, as a high point. And then, we could do that. Okay. Yeah. So we'll put the high price. We'll take the 7-day pass, and we'll multiply that by that, you know, 28 trips, and then we'll have that high pass, and then we'll do the same with the short pass. So we'll have a high number on for the pass price. We can always come down for the docket. And prior to going to the public hearings, we'll probably have more of that information on what that impact is.
Okay.
So I think that would accommodate.
So that we continue the docket growth, that we now are adding to the docket the high, we'll call it the high,
Out of range
high pass, top price pass to the docket. Is that is there a motion to do so?
So moved.
Second? Okay. All those in favor?
So that's the first.
Ms. Hutchins, we're also adding that, the seven-day short trip pass, right?
So, yes.
Which is currently proposed to be eliminated.
Is that you want a 28-day short trip pass. That would be something that we don't have today, so that would go on the docket. The question of whether you eliminate or don't eliminate the 7-day short trip pass, we've got on the docket a proposal to eliminate. However, as a result of the hearings, you may decide to just leave it the way it is.
Now, I will say I will not be able to put that pass on a SmartShip card by July 1 because that would be a programming change. So we'd have to have that pass available in paper. I would have to determine a way to distribute that through the distribution channels that we currently have. So there's a lot of implications to it, but we'll certainly iron those out and inform the board of what that is.
Okay. Mr. Downey, second.
As we've been discussing fares in these various meetings, the golden opportunity that's out there is the day in which we finally change to some form of open fare collection.
That's right.
And I certainly would hope as that happens and as it happens quickly, we in parallel work on how the fare system and the tariffs and the structure be changed. We shouldn't put a lot of money in place to have a new system that simply does what we do today. So we should be starting that tomorrow with the idea of what is it we really can achieve before the technology traps us into things that we can't do.
I agree, and I would like to take the opportunity to, as the board is aware, we have been doing a lot of work on that, so it's not like we're sitting on our laurels and not thinking about what's good for the customer with respect to how they pay and what type of pricing would be good for them. The current solicitation that we have is exploring a new electronic payment program. With that program, similar to what other entities do, TfL in London, for example, they actually allow a person to traverse the system throughout the day, and at the end of the day, they have a system that says, we'll tell you, based upon your travel method, what's the best price. You'll get the best price for us. That's a trust me type of a system that they have, which kind of goes to the comment that you're making, Ms. Hines, encouraging people to make trips, multiple trips, and encouraging them, giving them the confidence that we would be able to charge them a discounted amount. That is the new construct that we have with our new payment system. So as we try to merge the two and try to accommodate for passenger preference, we want to be careful about how we make that investment because we're going to be making a larger investment on the new payment system in parallel. So.
If I could make a second point, we will be adopting, I assume, this item to go forward in the docket. I don't want it to be taken as acceptance that everything in there is what we will wind up with. The purpose is to hear from the public. I'm still concerned about my jurisdiction, which happens to be all of America, and we're telling those people we're really going to soak them when they come to Washington. I'm not sure that's a great idea,
no.
But we'll work it all out as the process goes forward.
Okay. Are there other Ms. Hampshire calling? I'm sorry. I missed Ms. Porter. Were you waiting? Go ahead. Okay. Ms. Hampshire calling. Go ahead. Get this all on.
Actually, I wanted to follow up on a point that Ms. Porter made, which is when we had this discussion on the 12th, one of the things that I thought a lot about is why is it that we put these two things together? Why do we make the difficult recommendation around rates at the same time we're trying to pass the budget? Now, I know that's not something we can deal with this time, but as we look at how we do our work, I wonder, why is it we put these things together when they're both complicated? And it's really around figuring out rates. And then it's adopting a budget. And I know there are implications, but I just put that on the table.
And thank you, Ms. Hampshire-Cohen. And it was a reference about looking at fare policy. I hope we won't forget that we looked at fare policy, and prior to adopting fare policy, we went to our customers and the Riders Advisory Council, the Riders Accessibility Group. And I think that's part of one of the discussions that was heard. People heard things there, and then they saw something different. But there has been a discussion. I think there is the larger piece that we must come back into adopting policy as well as the framework of what technology will be used in the ongoing FAIR system. And that is, I think, something that has to come in concert. Ms. Porter.
I just have one additional question to beat this issue of the passes to death here. Is it possible now to load more than one seven-day pass on your Smart Trip card at one time? I mean, I don't need an answer right now. If we could talk about that, because that's
I have to find out. I don't know for sure. But so you're talking about loading for the next 2 weeks.
Right, or the next 4 weeks, or the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think so, because, and I'll clarify, because the system, I do know, is it starts when you use it, right? So when you use the pass, that's when the day starts where you get your 7 days. And so I'm not sure if you can buy multiple passes, but I'll find out.
Okay. Mr. Downs.
A process comment. If the board says it wants to do something and it turns out that it is not technically possible to do it, I'd hope that there was a work, and I know that it's inconceivable that the board would ask the staff to do something that is not feasible. So I'm recognizing that that is a possibility. That if that happens, that there is a conversation between the general manager and the chair over how that issue is addressed. It doesn't do any of us any good to have the board in a committee meeting give a direction, and then at a board meeting like this, start to ask questions about what went wrong and why it didn't happen and why it's not on the agenda, why it's not a resolution before the board. That conversation could take place earlier, and it could provide the board with detailed information about why it wasn't there, rather than simply asking in the middle of a board meeting why it's not there. And I would hope that we could work out a process that helps make this a better working relationship over this kind of process.
Let me make sure I clarify, because I think that you are exactly correct in process, but I think we left the board meeting on the 12th, 19th, in which we asked for the pass, and we agreed that a memo would go out. I hope we all received that, and that was the communication there. Now, the question of whether or not it went on the docket is the question that you may be asking, and that is the question regarding, I think, the accessibility piece, because that was one that we did not have. So I just want to make clear where we are here. And are there any other comments before we move forward? I still am not clear of how we are reflecting the accessibility piece, because I thought we were saying that we felt it should be on the docket. Is that not necessary? I don't.
Oh, I took something different away from it, but I could easily be wrong. I thought that what we would do is address, just like we talked about, the customized monthly pass. We would have it as something that we try to describe what was proposed so that it could be discussed during the town hall forum, and therefore given time to further analyze what goes on here. With that? No.
Are we all in consensus here? Okay. I guess I'm trying to respond to what I heard from the accessibility committee, and that the answer that I heard from you, Ms. Carroll, is that with this would be alluring. And I just want to have answered for me, for my clarity in working in that side with the accessibility committee, is that if there is only a lowering of any tariff, then we need not speak of it at all in the docket. Okay, is that the answer?
That's correct, but I just caution that may not be the case.
Okay. Then I am concerned that then by not putting it on, there is no opportunity for addressing it. It should be do so. I'm not getting the comfort zone that we're communicating clearly here.
I think what it is a different proposal from the current structure for fares. So it has to be examined in how we could do it. Certainly, if as a result of that examination, it's all less than the current, then based on what Ms. O'Keefe said before, we're probably in pretty good shape with regard to it. There may have to come a decision point where if you follow through that pattern, from what I loosely understand, it's only a very superficial level, that there could be points where you might not be within the ADA law with regard to twice the fare. And at that point, the board would have to make a decision to maybe do something lower. But what I'm trying to say is just automatically following that proposal may not lead you to a lower fare. You could make modifications to it to cause that to happen, from what I understand.
I hate to extend this, but unfortunately this is how we've gotten ourselves to here. I guess I want to take from the proposal that they gave us the discussion of simplicity and cost. And that
I think is where in the town hall forum we can advance that discussion so we have a better understanding from the public what they prefer, as well as for us to have a little bit more time to the extent we can explain what we see in terms of that proposal, how it would work. So there's what we're trying to do is progress the discussion, mm-hmm. and both do it in an open public forum as well as examine it so that at some point we can come back to the board and say, okay, this is how this would work. If it's just a matter of how you calculate and we're not violating the law, then it's easy. You don't need a public hearing. If it's something outside, and we hope that's where it is, but if it's something outside that, then we might have to come back for a public hearing at that point. But it's kind of hard at this point to say exactly what that is, because we can't tell anyone exactly what the fare impact is.
All right. We have,
Ms. Hutchins, can I just follow up? I haven't been through a fare change yet, but I remember in my jurisdiction the deep concern in the disability community about what was done in 2010. The question I would have is, what's the message that our disability folks should take away? Because otherwise we're going to have people, hundreds of people lined up in wheelchairs saying what we just heard here today. And if the board is going to be striving for something less complicated and no more expensive, is there a way to put that as a message around this docket?
What I'm taking away from this is that we can include in the town hall discussion what would be needed to address their proposal, and if the analysis shows that this indeed, and this is the part I asked, lowers it, then we don't need it on the docket. That's the one answer.
Right, right.
And the other, I think the other question, and I'm hesitating as I try and decide how to move forward, is, let's say, and also that we stay within the guides of the ADA requirement.
Okay.
Now, if we stay within the guides of the ADA requirement, we actually raise some fears, but we simplify the process. Is leaving it off the docket here a possibility in that kind of scenario? And does it merit placing it on the docket to hear from the customers as to how they would like to see that? That's the only piece. Ms. O'Keefe.
Well, I haven't seen the analysis and don't know whether it has been done as to whether the proposal that was made concerning the zones, the base fare plus zones, how that would be achieved to ensure that no one would be paid in excess of twice the fixed route fare. And this docket, it's twice the shortest fixed route fare. So that's the analysis that would be concerned. You can ultimately, you cannot adopt something, or should not adopt something, I should say, that is not compliant with the law. That doesn't mean you can't put it on the docket. If you so choose, there's a motion and a vote. So, okay. Mr. Daly.
With respect to that, the algorithm appears to be the price of the fastest trip from point A to point B. If we were to change the policy to the cheapest trip between point A and point B, would that make a difference, or would that fit the ADA requirement? I don't know.
The base plus the zone under that.
And one other request, could we get an explanation of the derivation of a 28% revenue increase, just how that was put together?
That's actually, the actuals in 2011 for access revenue was $5.5 million. In 2012, our current budget year, we budgeted pretty much the same, I think it was $5.5 or $6 million. However, the first half of the year, we're on the projection to attain an $8 million revenue number for access. So therein lies the 28%. Exactly. It's not.
It'd be good to get that on the record.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see if we can draw this to a conclusion in our discussion. Ms. Porter, go right ahead.
Okay. Let me just make sure I understand this about the access fares. Right now we're charging essentially the maximum fare, as I understand it. It's twice the fixed route fare. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And so we couldn't go beyond that anyway. Am I correct about that? So how could we raise fares under this proposal?
What the access committee, what they proposed is something that we, and as Mr. Charles indicated, could possibly raise the fare beyond a cap that we have in place, which is at $7, and would increase based upon the CPI. And so that's what's unclear. And I'll read it. It says they recommend a base boarding fare of $2 or less based on the ADA requirement that does not exceed twice the fare charged. And we further recommend that a zone system be created to set additional distance charges. That is based upon the fact that at this time WMATA staff is recommending a zone system based on paper fare cards. But basically, because of the implementation of the zone charge, it would then be the base charge plus the zone charge, and we could potentially be in a situation where that might be beyond, that might be considered a fare increase for some riders. We haven't done that analysis yet. So it's very ambiguous. We still understand the intent of it. Their intent was to simplify the fare structure to the rider. That was their intent of the zone and the base boarding. But we do not know what the implication is, and it could increase beyond the ADA.
But as a legal matter, it can't increase beyond the maximum that a person could pay anyway.
That's correct, but the zone charges are not yet defined.
Right.
So put it on the docket doesn't tell anything about what the charge would be,
right,
because those would have to be developed, and they would have to be developed so that they would be in compliance with the ADA maximum. I think that's all we're saying.
Okay,
so it could be done. It's just that we don't have the specified zone charges.
I guess what I'm trying to clarify is I don't see a way that this could end up increasing fares. So legally it could end up increasing fares, and so I'm not understanding why we can't say to people at the public hearing that we could do this if we had the information, if we'd done the analysis and so on, we could do this without an additional public hearing. Would we be legally able to say that?
I'm you could do it because you would ultimately act in a way that would not increase the fare. So you certainly could do that. That wasn't the point I was trying to make, and I'm sorry I'm not being clear. I don't think staff is saying that the recommendation could not be implemented, but it entails a base plus zone charges, and those zone charges would have to be defined, and they have not yet been defined.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry this is complicated. I agree with Mr. Downs about the discussions, but when it becomes, when we get things like this that are last minute that are very important, and we want to be clear, so my apologies up front. There is a technical component to this if we are to implement a zone-based system. Metro Access riders do not use the trip planner, or they use a trapeze schedule, another system, not our Next Fare 5 system. So there would be implications potentially of programming changes that we would have to do in order to accommodate the concept here, and I just wanted to be clear about that. We're looking at that.
Right, and the point that I'm trying to make is that we don't want to lead people to believe that because it's not on the formal docket, we therefore could not do it without additional processes.
Okay. With that, there is a motion on the table that has been amended to add the 28-day short trip pass. All those in favor for the amended motion? Ms. Whitway?
Not a short trip, just a 28-day pass.
Pass. Okay. Take short out. 28-day pass. But I think they define they define the 28-day pass would function the same as the 7-day.
What I heard was a recommendation that we have two 28-day passes, the full system-wide pass, and then one that is similar to and analogous to the short trip pass.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. And that is the amendment to the motion. Okay. All right. All those in favor of the motion before us?
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you very much, and I want to thank staff. I recognize I think we all recognize the work that goes into this, and there has been a lot of discussion about fares and et cetera. So with that, we will move forward. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. We voted on the substitute and the main. The last vote was the main. We've been talking a long time. Okay. I would like to go back to the statement that was requested, and I think the request is that as staff moves forward to share the town hall discussion, that we include these three issues that we've discussed for detail to be brought to our public for a discussion. Okay. The next item on the agenda is the report from the customer service and operations, Mr. Downs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee has only one recommendation, and that is the approval of the proposed agreement to enhance bus service between West Falls Church and the Mark Transit Center. It is a recommendation to approve and authorize for the general manager, chief executive officer, to agree to the terms of the agreement proposed by the Department of Defense to provide non-regional reimbursable metro bus service between West Falls Church Station and the Mark Center. I move its approval.
Moved by Mr. Downs and second by Mr. Dyke. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. The next item is the report from Planning, Program, Development, and Real Estate Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee met today. There was one item for discussion, which was that staff sought board approval to dispose of excess property at 11507 Georgia Avenue. The committee recommends approval of that, so I'd like to move approval of this matter.
Moved by Mr. Costa. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Bowser. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The next item on our agenda is the election of officers. And at this time, let me get my script in front of me, please. First, we call on
call on the election for Mr. Dyke for a motion.
I would like to nominate. Could you just talk into this? I would like to move the nomination of Catherine Hudgens, who also is my supervisor in Fairfax County, as the chairman of the board.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Dyke and seconded by Mr. Downs. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That motion passes. Let me move on to the next item, and I will comment later. Is there a motion on the table from Vice Chair?
Vice Chair. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the nomination of Tom Downs, Principal Director from the District of Columbia, to serve as Vice Chairman of the Board.
Second by Ms. Hampshire Cowling. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And opposed? A motion on the table for second vice chair?
Madam Chair, I would like to nominate my colleague and federal representative Mark Downey as second vice chairman of the board.
I second that.
Motion's moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed? Next item for discussion is I have a 10-page speech here that I had really thought I wanted to give, but I will come back in February and begin that process and share my comments. And I say that in wanting to say, first of all, thank you to my board colleagues on your confidence in my continuing this. After today, I test you quite well. I want to just comment and say very quickly that this has been a very invigorating year, and in my comments that I have written here, and I will not give in detail, I want to thank, first of all, the general manager. Mr. Searles is celebrating his anniversary, I do believe, for his 1 year here. And then celebrating that anniversary, we'd like to congratulate you for the tremendous amount of work that you, your staff, have done in really bringing this authority in a very positive direction on safety, on the relationship we have in with our customers, and the overall sense of dedication to what this system means. And that has not been easy doing this year, and I think I'd like to extend a thank to you, and I appreciate all of that work that's done, and I'm certain is the consensus of the board. I would further like to just simply share that 12 months ago when we were here at this board, most of the faces were unfamiliar to us at the dais. And today there are just a mere five or six of us that are still left on this board that were here before. But I must say that the work with the board was not one in which change was very extremely difficult, but rather we found a very good working relationship, and I want to compliment all of you for the kind of dedication you brought and the kind of work that we've been able to accomplish, and I look forward to working with you over the next 12 months. We have made an extreme amount of progress, I think, in the direction of where this authority should go in terms of the way a board functions, as well as the role of the leadership in this authority. We have a long way to go, and our work in the next year will be on the focus of where that must go. So thank you very much. With that, the next item on the agenda is approval of the procedures, board procedures, and it's the committee assignments. May I have a motion for the committee assignments as presented, the resolution? There's a motion by Mr. Downey for the resolution for the committee assignments. Is there a second? Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. Yes, Ms. Porter.
I apologize. I thought this had been brought to the chair's attention earlier, but the Safety and Security Committee has only one member from Maryland.
That is a very big oversight. Do I have numbers wrong?
And I believe three members from the district, which is fine with me, but I'd like to have two members from Maryland.
I think you were overrepresented. That's why we were there. May I offer a, may I have an offer of a amendment to the safety committee? And I think it is substituting Ms. Porter for Ms. Bowser.
I'm already on it. I'm the one Maryland person on the committee, so I don't think I can sit in two seats.
So it's Ms. Bowser. Okay.
I believe that this had been brought to the chair's attention earlier.
Barnes, Porter.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Barnes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think, Ms. Hampshire, I would like to propose a motion.
Please.
The motion would be that that I, being the third member from the District of Columbia, would be replaced by Ms. Hampshire Cohen.
Okay. I will accept that. The substitute is to replace Ms. Ms. Bowser with Ms. Hampshire Cohen. And I will ask, may we leave the vacancy for the vice chair until we come back? We have that discussion offline.
I'll do my best to do it.
Okay, you're required. Okay, any other changes that are needed? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Thank you. And the last item is the acceptance of the calendar, adoption of the calendar. The procedures are included in the resolution for the items of committee assignments, calendar, and schedule. Okay. Let me go back and clarify that motion. The motion is the adoption of a resolution for the board procedures for assignment of
Madam Chair,
committee.
There are no changes to the procedures.
No changes. That's correct.
Calendar and committee membership.
Okay. All righty. I think we have both items done, and it's calendars done. Thank you. Sorry about the confusion. Okay, the last item on the agenda is the report from the jurisdictions. District of Columbia, Mr. Downs.
I believe that Ms. Bowser has an item to report.
Very briefly, Madam Chair. We're pleased that a delegation from the board and staff will brief the mayor and council of the District of Columbia on update on our governance and budget on February the 22nd, and we're looking forward to that.
Thank you, Ms. Bowser. From Maryland, Mr. Nichols is not here, is reporting.
There's no items.
No items. Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. And I will ask Ms. Hines, do you have anything? I have none.
I would just share with our colleagues that the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission and the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority will be meeting in Richmond on February 9th, and Ms. Hudgens and I are on deck, along with Mr. Ewell, to update them on the work of our board. And are you going to come too? And Mr. Dyke's going to be there too, and bring them up to speed on our strategic planning. So we're trying to move that work along as part of the MBTC agenda.
Thank you. And Mr. Down. Okay. Is there any other business to come before the board? Hearing none, the board is adjourned. Thank you.